like one element wrong, and this is this one. I'm like, you got the isotope right. It's 238, but it's plutonium 238. You said uranium.
Cool. I used to, when I was at WXNT, like my least favorite part of the job is screening phone calls. Because when you screen phone calls, it's the fact checkers.
Uh-huh.
They call it, like, and it's so, like, they call in and they tell you the most obvious stuff or whatever. And you just go, thanks, but that was an hour ago. We've moved on. I'm not going to be able to wedge that into the show now. Oh, okay. Well, tell Abdul. I'll tell Abdul.
He's got a personal site just for this stuff.
I never told Abdul. Because he didn't care. He didn't care if he was wrong. I mean, it was like working for Donald Trump most of the time.
Abdul isn't wrong. He's always right.
And so it's funny to now be a libertarian, the party of fact checkers. Your isotopes were off by 3 grams. So.
But it was awesome. And that is that one comment there that made me like, I'm going to do this.
Carly's going to be very excited about our announcement.
Carly?
Carly Ernst.
Carly Ernst?
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go.
Wait a minute. Not ready. Are we live?
We are live. I told you we were live.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Anyone else hear that he said that we were live?
If you go back and rewatch the video, right as you sit down, I said, we're live, by the way.
We're getting a light. I need a light.
You need a light?
Yeah, I'm just going to turn my ringer off.
Okay.
Even though no one's going to call me.
Okay.
And I already have like 8 podcasts that I listen to on my phone.
He just went out of his way to tell me, I like Jason Stapleton better. It's like, that's okay. I liked John Schick better.
Should have just looked at him like, yep, I'm going to like the GOP better now. Everyone, we're out. Right. We are GOP now.
It was with the best of intentions, but it was, and so I take it that way because autism, that's right. All right, here we go. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe at Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff, which you can see at Patreon.com/WeAreLibertarians. The best part is that if you subscribe at $5 a month or more, then you're going to get extra segments, extra shows now, which we'll explain in a moment. Sometimes 2 to 3 hours of extra content a week if you are a bonus. That's a lot. A lot of extra wall. So only for $5 a month. And what you do is you help support the growth of independent media like us. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or WALPolitics. We're in our Facebook group or Discord channel. Both can be found at WeAreLibertarians.com. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Thank you to everybody that's emailed and written to the Facebook page. I really appreciate the kind comments. Please be warned that this show is raw, it's unedited, and it's authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. As I said at the top, I am Chris Spangle, your host. Joining me is my co-host, Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
Going good. Wish I had a lot of coffee, but, you know, I'm going okay.
You seem like you've had a lot of coffee.
Just a little. Not my full, like, two pots of coffee that I usually have, and then get my other French press this afternoon.
Two Pots Shakur was your college nickname, wasn't it?
No, back at college, it's 4 pots. Anyways, boom.
Yeah, Harry's on fire today. He's excited to get out of the house. He's a stay-at-home dad right now, mm-hmm. and which is a lot of fun, I would imagine.
It is. It's awesome being a stay-at-home parent. I think I have the most fun on my wife's day off, mm-hmm. and when she takes the baby, all that she wants to do all day, and watching her, I don't want to say the word, not fail.
Try.
Try and do her darndest, that's it's more of a like then it, but it also makes me feel good because it's like, wow, I am doing such a great job. And it makes me feel good because, like, one, it's, you know, it's a day off for me and I can, like, you know, do other things, and she's right. sitting there playing with our daughter, and it's awesome.
So is it weird you out that you got the maternal instinct in the relationship?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was weird.
Which I would say that doesn't surprise me, because at the wall pool parties, which got a little crazy at times, and there would be people like Jeremiah, who the boss hog would get a little out of control, Harry was there to pick up all the pieces. He was the caretaker of the group. And I remember looking at Greg going, you know, Harry's the low-key best friend of this whole group, and none of us even realized it until tonight.
I like to play support class,
right?
You know, just when MMOs or like RPGs. So it's like, oh, someone's in need, heal. I send a heal. I try to buff them, try to get them up. Yeah.
Enough of that Discord talk out of you. Which I really love the Discord. The Discord's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. The Discord's great. We have a lot of cool conversations. Just like Niece and I had a really cool conversation about Dragon Ball Z and Super on there a couple of times. On Friday nights, we sit on and we game on Friday nights and talk about different politics, stuff like that.
I don't even like read the conversations. I just play Duck Hunt.
Oh, the Duck Hunt?
I'm going to beat moving.target for first place. I sit there at work with Duck Hunt up.
No, that's me, right?
Is that you?
Yes, me. Oh,
well, I'm going to destroy you. So
can't beat me. I can spawn ducks. So if you get close, I can just give myself ducks.
That was the hand motion that you just did there. You're going to
just give myself some ducks.
Yeah, apparently. Okay, so here's a little update. We are going to add on something for our Patreon subscribers. You know, we are libertarians. We are always trying to expand and improve and do more. And the more that you gift us in Patreon subscriptions a month, the more we are going to offer. And Harry Price, the people have spoken. We have finally convinced Harry to do his own show.
Yes.
And Harry's going to start doing a Wednesday show on Twitch,
mm-hmm.
a Twitch stream with the Discord chat.
Yep.
So you could probably could get there. You're going to probably post it in the Facebook groups too.
Yeah, post in the Facebook groups. If I get confidence off, so send it up to me. No, probably not going to send it to the main page group then. But definitely the Discord group. Definitely get it on the Facebook page. If you're on the Discord, every time I stream in Discord, it automatically alerts you. Mr. Mises right. automatically alerts you on there and it tells you if we're streaming. But yeah, people have reached out to me and almost all of my social networks about want me to continue doing the other show. So thank you for all those people that reached out to me and messaged me. I think the final straw that made me do it was a comment that I got on Instagram. Someone messaged my Instagram about it. I was like, oh, wow, people really did like this. And that's what made me really want to do it, because it's like, well, because in the back of your head when you're sitting out there talking to camera, it's like, you know, it's like, I don't know if anyone really does this. And you know, I get such a good feedback on Tuesdays that makes me want to keep coming back every week. So doing that show and getting that feedback made me go like, I'll answer back. I'll do this. I'll do it.
So every Wednesday evening,
mm-hmm.
Evening.
It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be evening. I haven't decided the time because I thought about doing 7 Eastern or 8 Eastern.
Okay.
I haven't decided yet. I'm thinking more about 8 o'clock just so
More people are settled in. And
yeah,
ready
more
to,
people settled yeah. in, and the people from like Texas are at home, or people in SoCal are like, you know, they're at a point where they can listen to a podcast.
So Harry's going to host the community chat. Yep. So he's we can call it Loki Wall. I don't know if you've come up with a name for it yet.
I haven't came up with a name with it yet. But a working title is Loki Wall. That is probably end up going to stick if I can't think of something.
But other people can log in and chat with you, right?
Correct. Yeah, you can log into Twitch, chat with me in real time while we discuss various topics. As long as everyone stays okay, I will allow certain people from the Discord, if you're high enough level, into my chat to talk with me on air while I'm on Twitch, as long as you're high enough chat level on the Discord.
Okay. So Harry's community chat every Wednesday night, and Harry and I were talking today, like, we have so many that the goal of this show was to be an hour, and we've been way exceeding that because there's so much to talk about,
mm-hmm.
and there's so much Harry wants to talk about. And so we feel like adding another day is going to be good, but we didn't want to do another wall episode. I certainly cannot add another hour or three to my plate. And so Harry is going to do a Wednesday show, and you can watch live I don't know what's up with my mic.
Oh, you're cutting out. Yeah. The other person you should also thank is my wife too. Taking Gunther for another night off my hands.
Yeah.
So I can go and do that. But she likes the idea because just to give myself a break, because like most of the time I either like just A, mm-hmm. studying, or B, just watching Gunther all the time.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully my mic issues don't continue here. But anyway, so Harry will be leading the chat Wednesdays. You can watch it on Twitch. You can participate if you're anybody can participate, but priority goes to our Discord folks. And then I think it's the actual mic here.
Uh oh. You're down. Down. Mic down.
Hand me that mic down there, please. It's definitely the mic. So anyways, and then the only place that you can hear the audio is on the Patreon RSS feed for those who subscribe at $5 a month or more on the Patreon channel, which you can find at We Are Libertarian. So that'll be a lot of fun, and you can jump in on that. So what are you going to be talking about tomorrow, Harry?
Tomorrow, well, what happened after I also announced this and talked to Chris on the Discord server when we were discussing this, he immediately took a lot of my content that I wanted for tonight and kicked it immediately over to that Discord. It's like,
oh, you're getting your show. You can talk about what you want tomorrow.
Yeah, immediately took all my screeching and like made my own trailer card for me. It was like, it was awesome just to kind of appear out of the ether. But I think on Wednesday I am going to bring up, because from the last show we had a listener in Discord, Fanatic Paul, he's also a mod on there. He brought up some of the Ross Ulbricht stuff.
Right.
I'm going to bring up more of that stuff to try to get more back into more into Ross Ulbricht, more on an update what has happened, and to get more attention to it. Because anytime Ross Ulbricht is brought up, to most people don't really, they know a snippet or they know like a very bad movie or book. Or they're like, oh, this is what I heard. I'm like, well, that's not true. And there's so much truth out there. I care about Ross Ulbricht because just about anyone in tech, if you're under the age of 40, this could have been you. Any of you guys could have had this idea if given the right circumstances and decided to start the same thing and end up being Ross. He didn't start the site to become a drug kingpin. It was just an idea to see what he could do, and it just kind of just started to grow off of that.
Yeah, so, it's enough screeching. You can do that tomorrow night.
Other thing I want to do is because Ryan Holman and I have been going back and forth on the Discord server about the whole Intel CPU thing with the whole Meltdown thing,
right?
Which is I'm grisly fascinated in. And I got some tinfoil hat like conspiracy theories.
Basically, long story short, every Intel chip ever created in any device is now
suspect.
It's not suspect, but susceptible.
Yeah.
To being hacked.
Yeah.
It's really not good. Can you hand me that that down there? Yeah, you're going to have to try and keep these to like under 4 hours, though, because the last time was like 4 hours.
I'll just try to keep a timer on it. And it's a whole Intel thing, and it's like only certain chips. I'll go into it on tomorrow. Trust me, it's huge because it even does ARM chips, even the ARM chip in your phone and some IoT devices. So
yikes.
If you buy a bunch of cool IoT devices, hope you get a firmware upgrade. That's why IoT sucks.
All right.
And apparently you kicked over my Iran stuff too?
No, I didn't even touch the Iran stuff.
Okay.
And then James Darrymore will be over there tomorrow too. So, all right.
Wait a minute, that wasn't there a minute ago. When did this get put there?
That's the beauty of the Overflow Show. all right. So, first up is the president's mental health and this new book, Fire and Fury. And essentially, the first couple segments here are going to be a tale of good journalism and bad journalism. So, we're going to do bad journalism first. I have purchased the Fire and Fury book by Michael Wolff. I assume that you've heard of it. If not, this journalist, Michael Wolff, who is part gossip columnist, part magazine journalist. He's somebody who's worked for Vanity Fair. He's worked for, again?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. That's a processing issue or a court issue. Anyways,
spitting too much hot fire.
I know. I'm screaming into this thing. I feel so bad for everybody who works. I think it's this cord here. But, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is awful. So, all right. So, you want to get me? Which article did you want to pick? I'm going to, like, one, like, this is a really cool topic. I want to take the time to pick up and read Fire and Fury, but I've been reading Scott Horton's book, Fool's Errand.
Right.
That's what I've been reading. A lot more fulfilling, trust me. But this one article that you posted here on the trailer page for this thing that you posted in the last hour when I was trying to get ready to go here,
right.
I haven't read it yet, right. But I am excited. I want to read this one. This is I'm going to make sure this one's on my docket, but like the the one on the rare link.
Let's just take a pause here.
Oh, okay.
Get my mic problem worked out.
Oh, it's that bad? You actually got to stop?
Yeah, I know. I never stop. I don't like to stop, but if it's not the microphone, I'd rather do the mic that makes me sound good. Sometimes these cheap little cords in the boxes are the
worst.
Are the problem.
Yeah.
I think this is something that's maybe in... I mean, these are like $70... This is a $70 cord. So I can't imagine that it's...
Yeah, which, you know, when it comes down to like...
Check one, two, check one, two.
Because I really usually thought like the cords were meaningless until you podcast for a while. Like, oh, that... $5 cord sucks.
Yeah, no.
You know?
The first cords I bought were like these $15 cords.
Mm-hmm.
And they were $10 cords. They shorted out within 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And I took them back, and the guy was like, I don't even know why we sell these. I would not sell these to anybody.
Ouch.
So, all right.
Ouch. I was like, thanks, dude. That's like, because I remember recording one podcast 1 week. Beautiful, crystal clear. Next week, I was like, what is going on? Cords. I switched the cords out. It sounds beautiful again. You know? Crap like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Podcasting stuff.
Here we go. All right. So first up tonight is basically the first two segments are a tale of good journalism and bad journalism. We're going to start with the bad journalism, which I think it's unfair to blanket the Fire and Fury book by Michael Wolff as all bad journalism. But it's certainly more gossipy than most things. Now, I bought the book the day that it came out. They moved it up. It was supposed to be released today, and it was actually put out last Friday, so they could get a jump on basically the president sent a cease and desist letter and threatened to sue the publisher for releasing this book, and so they wanted to get it out to take advantage of something called the Streisand effect. I don't know if you know what the Streisand effect is, but essentially this environmental photographer was taking photos of the beaches, and like seven people had seen the photo of the beach erosion that the photographer was taking a photo. Well, the beach happened to be Barbara Streisand's, and she sued for like $4 or $5 million, saying, remove that photo, that violates my privacy. Now the photo's been seen 1.5 million times because she brought attention to it. And Donald Trump came out and said this is a fake book, which whatever that means, and said to the publisher, take this, get rid of this, censor this. And so it popped. It had some heat. The Guardian had gotten a preliminary copy somehow. Probably Michael Wolff shipped them the copy,
mm-hmm.
and it's full of gossipy stuff. Like there is, you know, on page 76, an account of, you know, Donald Trump's hair and how it actually works. In the first chapter, he talks about how Donald Trump considers it the highest goal of his to bang his friends' wives. And will like call in one of his friends or his coworkers or underlings, and call up their wives on the speakerphone and say, you know, he's been saying terrible things to you. Just listen to how he talks about you. Brings the guy in, starts asking about their sex life, gets them to talk shit about their wife, and then he goes and tries and have sex with them. Nobody can verify if that's true or not. Okay, nobody knows if that stuff's true. I'm about 25% of the way through the book. I didn't get it read over the weekend for a myriad of reasons, but I've read that the first 30% is the most important part anyways. And my impression of it, it's a very well-written book. It's very interesting. It is worth checking out from the library, maybe not purchasing. Okay? He's a very good writer. He loves those big SAT words that I had to look up like seven words in the first 25%, like these enormous vocabulary words. It's very interesting. But every administration has these kind of books. There's two kind of books that always come out about a president's first year, because everyone's always curious about the pageantry of how the new administration works and the romance of it, and you know, Ronald Reagan strolling down the hallways, and how is he doing? You know, how's he operating his White House? And there was a book, a famous book, which I loved, called Dutch, about Ronald Reagan. Edmund Morris, who is a fantastic writer, wrote this book about Ronald Reagan. He was granted access for the first year and decided that he didn't want to write a book, and so he basically narrated a story, made up some characters, put himself in the book, and it's very well written, but it's very, like, it's not journalism, right? Kitty Kelly and Bob Woodward wrote Bush administration books. You had, you know, Bob Woodward's usually the one that writes the first of the year book. I'm not surprised he didn't get access to the Trump administration. You know, so Plan of Attack, for instance, about Bush and planning the Iraq War, and it's full of all these surprises. Kitty Kelly wrote books about the Bushes and the Obama, it wasn't the Obamas, the Royals, where it's just like crazy gossip.
Mm-hmm.
You had Edward Klein writing books about Obama, the Obama administration, and it's just Michael Wolff has kind of carried on in those traditions. And what he has done is he's written a book where he is taking the atmosphere and describing the atmosphere and passing along to you stories that have been told to him. Okay, so anybody who wanted, he basically says in the introduction of this book that nobody was there to tell me that I wasn't allowed to be there. Like, mm-hmm. I literally sat on a couch and just hung out. I did 200 interviews, and I have tapes, and I took notes, and blah blah blah. But it shows the looseness, I guess we can say, of the Trump administration, where they were so inexperienced that they didn't know to say to a reporter, go away. They just let him hang out. Yeah. And so he picked up a bunch of stories, and people, it wasn't an authorized thing. Like, you've had some of these books have been authorized. Like, what was the Jonathan Alter book? I think The Promise, and then there was maybe it was The Natural or something. Jonathan Alter was essentially granted a ton of interviews with President Obama to kind of outline his first few years and give you, like, the official account of what had happened. Well, that wasn't what was happening with Wolf. Wolf was just, like, wandering in and out of the White House and had been given clearance by Bannon and was able to pick up a bunch of stories. And he kept going to people, and they would just give their version of events. And the way that you really, I would interpret this book in all the reaction that I've seen, is that it is the various camps within the White House, which come down to the Bannon camp. You have the first family in Donald Jr. and Ivanka and Jared Kushner. And then you have the Reince-Priebus, the Reince-Priebus GOP crowd, Sean Spicer. And those three camps in that first few months until John Kelly got there were warring with each other. And they were telling Michael Wolff and any press that would listen all these different gossipy things about what was happening within the administration. And if you followed The Hill or Politico or any of the Washington press or watched the Sunday shows, you've seen a lot of what is laid out in this book. Like, this book is not just a fabrication of things. This book is just an accounting of the stories that were being told around the White House at that time. Now, that doesn't make it journalism. Journalism is when you are told these little pieces of facts, you write them down in your notebook, you go and you talk to your editor, and you go through an editorial process. Well, mm-hmm. Michael Wolff didn't have that, and he clearly didn't even have a fact checker, because there are so many inaccuracies in this book that everybody, from the left to the right to the Washington press, all are just, like, pointing out how many inaccuracies there are. And it just points out that he was rushing this book. He didn't have basic facts, like, he's just very sloppy. Yeah. Basic facts like first names were wrong, birth dates were wrong, ages were wrong, you know, for instance, when he says the Steele dossier was published in CNN, well, it was actually published by BuzzFeed. Little things like that, that if it had gone through any kind of fact-checking, vetting process, it wouldn't have met muster. Like, the New York Times editorial process would not have published this book, for instance, okay? So, but he also, the reason you also wouldn't have it clear the Times is because they want to maintain access.
Right.
And so what he is famous for, Michael Wolff is famous for burning his sources.
Mm-hmm.
He just prints it because he knows he's never going to talk to these people again. And he says, here's what they all said. And a lot of what people think is that people told him stuff and thought that it was off the record and he published it anyways. And I think you can verify that a lot of it, especially a lot of what Steve Bannon said was true, was that Steve Bannon apologized. And Steve Bannon basically ghost wrote this book. Like, the majority of this is focused on Bannon. Donald Trump is not a character in this book, really, even. It's central to Bannon. And it is essentially like Bannon just sat there and fed him everything,
mm-hmm.
just like he did with the Joshua Green book, Devil's Bargain. And that was the statement that was released last week, was basically Donald Trump eviscerating Steve Bannon so effectively that it made my nipples hard, and saying that the only thing that was improved was the phone bill when when he left here. I mean, Steve Bannon just basically has glommed onto anybody of notoriety and made himself a barnacle. He started with Sarah Palin and then Dick Morris and made documentaries about them and then Donald Trump. And he's not the genius that everybody has assigned in Washington. I think if you listen to Ben Shapiro, who worked with Bannon and has a pretty the show after the statement by Trump last week, whatever day that was, I think Wednesday, Thursday of last week, and it was just basically an hour of Ben Shapiro eviscerating Steve Bannon and saying he's a terrible person. He thinks that he is a brilliant man. He's a phony. He's a guy who's a Goldman Sachs, Ivy League educated billionaire who flies around on his jet pretending to be homeless to ingratiate himself with a group of people that he's never really been a part of. He comes in after the fact. He comes in after Trump has won the nomination. He's put in charge of the campaign by the Mercers, who are the biggest funders of Trump's campaign at that point, so they want their eye on the campaign. But he's not the strategist. He's just there helping execute what Roger Stone and Donald Trump formulated a year before that. And then Bannon would leak to the press that he was the genius behind the Trump victory. And he actually had very little to do with it. And then he caused nothing but strife once he got into the White House. And now, today, he's been fired by Breitbart. And I'm happy about that because I think Steve Bannon is an absolute cancer on the body politic. I think he's nothing more than a propagandist who is manipulating people who are ill-informed and are generally biased towards, they only will read what the president tells them to read. Like, they're the useful idiots of the Trump movement, to be honest. And I think that he manipulates those people to believe certain things and helps continue this alternate reality that Donald Trump creates.
Mm-hmm.
And what you really are seeing right now in the reaction of this book is the people who live in that Donald Trump alternate reality view this book the way that Donald Trump views this book. The people who are in the Washington press view the way that the Washington press would view that book. The people on the left look at the book and say, well, here it is. This is the smoking gun to get him out of office, saying the exact same thing they've always said. So the book Fire and Fury is really just a chronicle of the last year of politics, and I apologize for spitting all over Harry. I just leaked everywhere. I apologize.
Everywhere.
So it was like I was smashing watermelons up here, like at a Gallagher concert. So this book really isn't a lot of it is just not new. a lot of it is stuff you already know. And if you read the book, you're just going to go, oh, yeah, I forgot that happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that
and
happened.
With a few behind-the-scenes insights that if you were paying attention to the Washington Press, you would have already kind of seen this stuff. It's like the stuff that you see on Twitter that kind of makes the rounds on the Washington Journal-O, you know, the the Journal-Os, kind of like the nerd juggalos. That stuff that floats around, like, you know, Donald Trump can't read. You know, like,
so that whole book is just that stuff.
It's a really great place to start. Like, if you're just coming into politics and you're kind of getting interested and you kind of want to catch up on where we're at in terms of the Trump administration, this is a good place to start to recap the first year. But you have to be careful, because it needs to be read skeptically, because he didn't have an editorial process on this. It literally is just him writing what he heard. That's not journalism. Like, yes, writing a journal and then presenting it to the public, you could, I guess, say is journalism, but that's not really what modern journalism is about. Modern journalism is about trying to work a bunch of different sources to find the most accurate most accurate picture of what's going on in those times. And
so it's just more like a blog in written form.
Basically, but really well written. And you can get a taste of it. I'll put two, Vanity Fair, I think it was, and The Hollywood Reporter both had excerpts of the book. And I will put that into the show notes so you can get the link to that. I'm also sending the show notes and the episodes out to our email list. So sign up on our email list at wearelibertarians.com or walpolitics.com. Mm-hmm. Walpolitics.com is the official home for We Are Libertarian show notes. So you can find all the output and all the byproduct of Wall Show Prep at walpolitics.com and on our Facebook and Twitter there. So I really I just didn't find anything in this to be groundbreaking, and some of it was not believable, right? So it's an entertaining read, but it is not an accurate depiction, nor do I think it was ever intended to be. I don't think the author ever intended it to be that. And it just makes us, those of us who are rational and who live in the middle, feel crazy, because we're stuck again in the middle. People who haven't read the book are sitting there screaming opinions about the book, and you just go, well, okay, what's the truth? Well, this is what the truth is. I mean, it is what reality are you living in is how you're going to perceive the book. So if you're somebody like me, and here's my take on Trump, I think the Trump administration is pursuing a few policies that are very libertarian that I like. I think there are a few policies, especially in terms of foreign policy, that are not libertarian and that I do not like. The man, Donald Trump, I think is grotesque, unbecoming and unprepared to be the president of the United States. I find him hilarious, but I also find him to be a giant baby. And it's funny to see everybody start to have the conversation. I tweeted out 2 or 3 months ago, it's hilarious to watch everyone pretend that there isn't a giant baby in the White House. Because it's like if you watch the Sunday shows and you watch the Washington press briefings, the White House press briefings, it's like Kim Jong-un. Like, we all can see Donald Trump with our eyes.
Yeah.
And we all know the reality of who and what Donald Trump is. And then these people come out and say things that, like, just are the opposite of what we all see. And then there's hilariously this group of people on the right who just believe that reality because Baghdad Bob says it. And this book kind of feels like a lot of those people saying to Michael Wolff, here's what I really think, and I've just got to get this off my chest. Print this, but don't put my name on it.
Mm. Well, yeah, because it's like the people that want to believe in the Donald Trump 5D chess theory.
Right.
Because it's very comforting. Like, oh, no, he's playing 5D chess. He's got this. He's not a crazy person. He's not a big baby. He knows exactly what he's doing.
No. He's got it all under control. He's got it all under control.
Yeah.
I believe it. I know he does.
It feels good. It's like, right. Oh, no, this is 5D chess here. This is a good move here. You know, just like I was talking to my mother about it. It's like, it's like, when Donald Trump went against the whole kneeling thing, it's like, no, that's a D, it's a 5D chess move, making it okay to protest, making it okay for black people to kneel. It's like, yeah, that's the 5D chess move there. Wasn't a crazy person tweeting about football players.
No, I mean, there's stuff that, I mean, Donald Trump was denied purchase of the Buffalo Bills. He had his business interest in the football league that ESPN did the documentary about, crushed by the NFL, and he holds a grudge against the NFL, and now he's taking it out on them. And then he just went to the college football championships yesterday, and you know, stood for the anthem, so Don Jr. could tweet out, "It's so great to see someone standing for the anthem." Meanwhile, Donald Trump doesn't know the words to the national anthem. Go, I'll post this in the show notes, but the video, and I've posted this on Facebook too, the video of Donald Trump mouthing the words, or trying to mouth the words to the national anthem, is hysterical, because he clearly has no idea what the words to the anthem are. And like, when he gets to the, you know, "Bombs brightest red glare," then he mouths it, but then like, there's the,
and listen, it's the best glare. It is the best.
it's such a superfluous thing to like be mad about, but it's just funny because of his emphasis on it. And he's just like all the rest of us. Like, none of us can sit there and sing the whole national anthem just from start to beginning. Maybe some of us can, but
I can get the verse three.
Right. Most of us kind of like at the. But like, Donald Trump would tell you, "I know all the words. I wrote the words. They're the best words." Like,
right now, he's executive power. He could change it.
Right.
This is the new anthem. I wrote it.
So it is. It's hilarious to me.
Oh, can't you see my glory?
So probably the best breakdown was David Harsanyi in the Federalist. It says, "Don't let fire and fury normalize fake but accurate." And I thought this was probably the best breakdown of it kind of covered every angle of this book and was really a fair treatment of it and all the coverage of it. You know, and he just basically says, you know, the press reaction has been a problem, and that they take a book like this wholesale. You know, like the Boehner story. He knows who Boehner is. Come on. It's saying in the book that he doesn't know who John Boehner is ridiculous. He's played golf with the man. Like, everybody, it's easy to debunk that he knows who, he doesn't know who John Boehner is. And so David writes, "Not that these sorts of tomes are new. Every president has his Kitty Kelly. What is new, though, is the wall-to-wall coverage of the book. Wolf has given outlets a convenient excuse to repeat unverified stories about the Trump administration that they couldn't talk about otherwise. Mm-hmm. In doing so, they are left to defend the book's abstract truths. This was an astonishing thing to read. I found an error in their writing. Imagine members of the press in 2012 arguing, sure, the Ed Klein book about Barack Obama is filled with unsubstantiated anecdotes, exaggerations, and untruths, but the spirit of the narrative rings true, so we're going to cover the heck out of it. It's far more likely that we would see, CNN has not independently confirmed many of Klein's assertions, so we doubt the veracity of the book as a whole. This was a journalistic standard. Not to mention that the broader narrative of Fire and Fury doesn't always seem to align with reality unless you believe Steve Bannon's perception of the world. Reading the epilogue of the book, it's rather obvious that the former White House chief strategist drove Wolf's narrative, attacking his enemies and getting the basic facts about events and people wrong. For instance, the description of senior policy advisor Stephen Miller as an uneducated intern whose lack of policy chops drove him to Google for how to write an executive order is absurd, no matter what you make of his opinions. Nominally accurate is what a lot of people are saying. Maggie Haberman, you know, Maggie Haberman, I think, is an exceptional reporter. She is the White House reporter for the New York Times. Long Reads podcast, the Atlantic Interview podcast. Who else? The Preet, what's his face? Bahara? Preet Bahara did an interview with Maggie Haberman. I highly suggest that you go and listen to those podcasts with her. And I'll put those in the show notes, because Maggie Haberman is a very influential journalist, because she's covered Donald Trump for 20 years at the New York Post and the New York Times, And she is setting the tone for what a lot of people believe about Donald Trump. And so she writes, even as some things are inaccurate, flat out false, there's enough notionally accurate that people have difficulty knocking it down. Well, that is true. The broader narratives seem like they could be accurate, but the facts are wrong. Well, he writes, notionally accurate sounds a lot like fake, but accurate. And he points out that a lot of these people are writing books about Trump, and so they'd like to knock one of their competitors down. So, and I just want to make sure there's nothing else in this that, but I would say, like, Steve Bannon saying that he apologized.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why that's monumental. Steve Bannon basically put out a statement apologizing to Trump and saying he supports Trump and he apologizes to the kids and he didn't mean to call Don Jr. traitorous. He meant Paul Manafort. Well, Steve Bannon considers apologies weakness. We've talked about Steve Bannon and Donald Trump and how they're very similar in that apologizing shows weakness. You never admit that you're wrong. You just burr your way through. You know, if you're accused of molesting 14-year-old girls, you just throw it back and say it's fake news and they're concocting it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about these handwritten signatures from two of the witnesses? That's all forged and faked,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, and you just, like, keep going.
Keep chugging forward.
Keep chugging forward.
Take photos at a Girl Scout camp while you're at you.
Steve Bannon is the person who is, like, spearheading the fake news charge against the mainstream media, and he came out and said that I'm sorry I said this stuff. Wouldn't it be easy enough to say this is fake news? This guy made this all up. Mm-hmm. Well, he knows he can't because what he said is on tape. Those 200 hours of tape, probably 199 hours of it is Steve Bannon,
right?
You know, and so I think there's a lot of this stuff is probably pretty accurate, but mm-hmm. So it's notionally true. So
plausible. The one cool thing is like was the when he was on MSNBC and he was talking about in the book. Well, in the book, you know, there's a lot of talk about people using the 25th Amendment to, you know, to take away powers from Trump. Now that was an interesting topic there, though.
Yeah. And so Michael Wolff basically said that 100% of the people mentioned all believe he's nuts,
mm-hmm.
and that they discuss as a staff the 25th Amendment often. And Axios writes, Axios is a great website. It's really quick information. Some of the sites that I recommend, Axios, Political Wire, Real Clear Politics. You can get The Hill. You can get just a quick look at what's going on in politics and the news by checking these sites out because they're kind of aggregators. Mike Allen used to run Politico's, the Political Wire, the morning email that basically – Washington elite and establishment people leak rumor and gossip to him. And he prints it, and he's one of the most powerful people in Washington, one of the most powerful reporters, started Axios. And he writes in Trump's State of Mind, the article posted a couple days ago. Basically, after the I'm a really smart genius... I mean, Trump tweeted out, actually, throughout my life, my two greatest assets have been mental stability and being, like, really smart. Why would you put the like in there? Like, are you just messing with us? Like, you're just messing with us, aren't you, sir? I think that would qualify as not smart, but genius. A very stable genius at that. Like, mm-hmm. Which is the funniest thing ever. Like, a very stable genius is so funny. I forgot to plug that in.
Oh.
Could you
awesome.
Yeah. Could you be a deer and plug that in for me? Thank you. A lot of technical issues. Welcome back for the new year. So we're just kind of in uncharted waters with people questioning, and Mike Allen kind of lists this. You know, leaders and citizens of other nations are openly debating Trump's sanity. Democrats, who already called in a psychiatrist to brief them on his mental health, will surely escalate the inquiry. Republicans on the Hill privately express concerns about the president's stability, though none have been willing to air their concerns publicly. Most urgent of all, the internal madness Trump stirs makes it more likely top staff leave and less likely good replacements come in to help run the government. This, more than anything, worries the inner circle. The media, at first delicately and now less so, is increasingly exploring the president's neurology. As I type this, the banner on CNN is mental health issue. Is it wrong to question Trump's mental fitness? So, the mental stability topics they talk about are more around narcissism, impulse control, and lack of empathy, all traits well known to voters before the election.
And presidents.
Right. He has very few close and authentic relationships with people outside of Ivanka and Hope Hicks, who sources say he views as another daughter. What some officials say troubles them is, at best, they seem to have no improvement in the office. In office, at worst, there's been a slight worsening. Trump definitely repeats stories a lot, which Michael Wolff of the book basically said, you know, he will repeat stories over and over, and he will just kind of like he would repeat the same 10 stories every 3 hours, and now it's like 3 stories every hour, and it's just a lot of repeating. He repeats a lot of stories. Some friends say more than he did in the past and might only let aides say 2 or 3 words before cutting them off. Again, these are not new characteristics. Another biographer basically came out and said, yeah, that part of the book is absolutely true, because in I forget what he wrote. It was a book review on CNN about the book, basically said that's absolutely true. He repeats stories. He doesn't listen. He's just very self-absorbed, which we can believe. Some aides say that if colleagues aggressively push back, sometimes using curse words and a raised voice, he listens and seems to invite more of it. But if they remain struck by how quickly he gets roiled and consumed by the smallest of slights or pushbacks outside of meetings. Officials point to how he handled Syrian airstrikes and his triumph with the tax bill, but the same officials also concede that gets way overshadowed by the not normal dimensions of most days. Trump has told people close to him that if you want to do great things in life, you're going to have people taking shots at you. Remember, this is a man who has spent his entire adult life in some form of litigation. Several friends and aides have told us in private they worry about an impulse over dangerous move against North Korea. Others too, especially at Trump's bubble titans and strong-minded internal critics, leave the White House. So, you know, the mental illness question, I think, is being brought up because it's clear the Russian insider stuff didn't work.
Right.
Like, as we've detailed, like, I'm done talking about Russia. That's such it's over. Mm-hmm. That was so 2017. It's just clear to anybody who's of an independent mind that there really was no collusion between the Russians and the Trump administration to win that election.
Correct.
So now the next phase is the mental health stuff.
Yeah, we're going to get them on mental health. And, got someone in chat, Dennis, was talking about they should probably bring back the Goldwater rule.
Well, the Goldwater rule exists. And so essentially, I can kind of outline where that comes from. If you, let's see, Harry, do you think Trump is crazy?
I have not a psychiatrist, but I think, I don't think he's crazy, but I think anyone that can believe that they should be president or be in charge of that many people or be the mouthpiece of that many people have some form of narcissism or some form of a gigantic ego on them.
Right.
Whether that's a bad thing or hampering to his, you know, situation, I don't know. Would it get to him that he's used to being a public figure, but probably not controlled in the same manner that he is?
Right.
That if he wanted to go get a pizza, he would just go get a pizza. He can't really do that right now. He's got to be careful. His movements are planned. And I think that can get to a person. Especially someone like Trump, who's just like, no, I'm just going to go do this. I do what I want. You know who I am. I can go anywhere in the world. So the simple fact that, you know, being that, that rat bubble of being president, it does probably get to him, because stuck at one spot, then go do this, then, you know, you got all these meetings, and it gets him. But being crazy? No. Being just a baby boomer who repeats stories over there? Yeah, like majority baby boomer, just repeat stories over and over again. Most Gen Xers and millennials know what I'm talking about, that they have had their baby boomer boss tell them the exact same story at when they came in for that morning meeting and when they left that afternoon. They got the exact same story from that stinking baby boomer boss.
Right.
So, is your boss crazy? No, he's just a freaking boomer. It's what they freaking do.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I come down. Like, I don't think Donald Trump is an insane person. Like, I don't think that he's crazy. I think that he's just, he has declining faculties. I think he's a 70-year-old man, 71,
mm-hmm.
Who doesn't exercise, who eats a massive amount of fast food, two pints of ice cream a day. Like, here's somebody that has done that.
Two scoops.
Who has done that for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Wolf book talks about how he eats cheeseburgers in bed before he goes to bed and, like, eats KFC because he's afraid that the White House chefs are going to poison him. He has a lifelong, like, fear of being poisoned and that like, he doesn't. One of the gossipy things was that, like, he refuses to let the White House staff clean his room. Like, he will take his sheets off the bed and give them to them to clean, or he will, like, yell at them if they pick the clothes up off the floor. Like, he's just very particular. Like, remember when the dossier came? It's like, I'm also kind of a germaphobe. So, but here's a man who doesn't take care of himself and who is, you know, working himself endlessly. So if I have said on this show multiple times over the last few months, something's up with Donald Trump because there's been a clear cognitive decline. And I'm not saying that because I dislike the man, because I don't want the man to have cognitive decline. Like, he was elected by the American people. I want him to take care of himself and be healthy. I definitely don't want Mike Pence to be president.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I've been in Indiana when Governor Pence was Governor Pence, and he was the worst governor in modern history, and I would prefer Trump over Pence, I think. But
all he had to do after Mitch Daniels was just sit there in a chair and smile.
And he didn't do that. He ruined it. He wrecked everything. So Trump is somebody who just doesn't take care of himself. Like, I am fat, and I am at the gym all the time, and I shouldn't have had Chick-fil-A for lunch, but, like, and I'm going to the gym, and I can barely walk today because yesterday was leg day, because I know the consequences of eating a fast food diet every day, three meals a day for 70 years and not exercising. Like, I know what kind of, you know, mental decline you can have,
mm-hmm.
what kind of health decline you can have. And so he doesn't take care of himself. Mm-hmm. And I think when you start to see him slurring his words during the move of the embassy to Jerusalem. Yeah, I know. How
is that Chick-fil-A?
How ironic is that?
I got that Chick-fil-A in you.
So, you know, and then the holding the water with two hands is odd, and the just kind of wandering around the stage a lot, and the decrease, which we'll kind of detail some of that with some of these articles. Like, I've had some concerns, and I've mentioned it a couple times on the show that I'm worried about him. I think that there's an issue with him, and I'm not doing that out of any kind of, like, political malice, because, frankly, like, I don't care if Donald Trump or, like, I'm a libertarian. Like, mm-hmm. for me, Donald Trump has been better than Hillary Clinton in some ways, and I think Donald Trump would be better than Mike Pence, so, like, I don't want anything to happen to the guy. And just on a human level, you don't want to see, like, I mean,
human, because that is somebody's dad.
Yes.
Yeah. I watched
I watched my two great grandparents, slip away from into Alzheimer's. I've got, my grandmother right now who is in the mid stages of Alzheimer's and, you know, to the point where you go and she doesn't know who you are, you know, and has some vague deep set memories, but for the most part, we'll tell you the same stories over and over and over. And so I know the signs of dementia and I know the signs of Alzheimer's. And, you know, when you really, like, in these two articles I'm about to present, like, there, if some of this stuff is true, that's concerning.
Yeah.
And a lot of it mimics the decline of Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying this because out of political malice. I just think that it is a relevant discussion to have if a 71-year-old man that doesn't take care of himself physically, and is showing weird behavior,
mm-hmm.
is having some issues.
Right.
when he's president of the United States.
Yeah, can get scary. Can get it, it's very dangerous. But you know, just remember, like they can't really diagnose him with Alzheimer's. They can think he has the signs of it. They won't truly know until they slice open his brain. And,
sure.
And I'm sure they probably won't let him.
No, I'm president right now. I can't have you slice open my brain. Thanks.
I'm just saying when he passes, he's hard, like, I'm just pass. Not going to let you. yeah. And the two, like, whole cup things, yeah, that could just be like, it does look like a lack of motor function.
Yeah.
Or just could be like an injury, or it was heavier than he thought, or he was just like just tired and nervous. But who knows? Mm-hmm. You know, don't know what's going on in that whole situation, the whole context of the thing. You know, I've never been in front of a camera for 24 hours a day.
Sure.
You know, for a year, I think I'd probably be like, get my coffee.
Yeah, but this guy has been.
I know,
most of his adult life.
But it's different though. It's completely different. Like I said, it's he can be in front of the cameras and stuff, but if he wanted to, he could jump on his jet and ditch them all at any moment.
No,
he can't do that.
Yeah, I'm thin-skinned and sensitive, and I can't imagine, because he's twice, three, four times more than I am.
Yeah. I'm like, I couldn't do it either, because like I'm so thick-skinned, but I can also write people off very quickly. So that's why I know I couldn't be president. There's so many people out there in the street starving because, like, you know what? I'm going to be president, but I'm not going to do anything for 4 years. I'm just going to sit in Camp David playing video games and just inviting YouTubers over to game with the entire 4 years.
Or golf every day. So
no, I demand to be in the NFL, and I want to be quarterback of losing teams with losing records. I demand to be quarterback. What are you going to do, lose?
You'll all-time attendance records.
I'm going to be quarterback for the Cowboys. It'll be awesome.
So Jacob Solomon, Reason, on January 8th, and I'll put this in the show notes, wrote an article titled, "Is Trump a Very Stable Genius or a Dangerous Lunatic?" And I thought this was a very fair, well-written article. It's not as hyperbolic as it seems. There's a Yale forensic psychiatrist named Bandy Lee. She wrote a book along with 27 other psychologists talking about his mental health. She says, "The level of concern by the public is now enormous. They're telling us to speak more loudly and clearly and not to stop until something is done because they are terrified." Now, here's the thing about Bandy, and I've read some of the stuff that she's said in other articles, and she really cherry-picks a lot of things and kind of blows them out of proportion to fit her narrative. Mm-hmm. And so I don't find her to be all that credible. She seems to be somebody who has a political agenda and is using her credentials to mm-hmm. diminish the view of the president of the United States for political gain, which is not something you're supposed to do, according to the Goldwater rule, which I'll explain in a moment. But she wrote a book called "The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump: 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess President." I think. And so he basically goes on to write, "I think Lee and Trump are both drawing hasty conclusions based on biased samples, and Lee's belief that she has any special authority to judge the president's competence is as at least as delusional as Trump's belief that his success as a developer, reality TV star, and a politician puts his IQ score above 140. Lee is rebelling against the American Psychiatric Association's ruling barring members from diagnosing at a distance public figures whom they have not personally examined. The injunction, which can be found in Section 7 of the APA's Principles of Medical Ethics, is known as the Goldwater Rule because it was largely a response to psychiatric critiques of the 1964 presidential nominee, in particular an article in Fact magazine that quoted APA members who described Goldwater as, among other things, a dangerous lunatic, a repressed homosexual, a self-hating Jew, a paranoid schizophrenic, and a mass murderer at heart, just like Hitler, Castro, Stalin, and other known schizophrenic leaders." All right, well, that seems a little extreme. The APA has rejected such wild speculation as unprofessional and unethical, a pseudoscientific cover for political disagreements. Yet psychiatry itself is based on equating things people say and do with diseases, providing a medical veneer to value judgments. And the profession's diagnoses are inherently subjective and cannot be verified by biological test, which is exactly the truth. Like, what I go in, I see a therapist, what I go in and tell my therapist is all the information that she has. So it's like Michael Wolff, when he gets all of his information from Steve Bannon, that becomes his reality for a book. You know, and if my therapist were writing a book about my life, then she's going to have one side of the story. And she's not going to have Harry's side of the story. Well, you know, Spangle just broke up with this person. Well, I'm sure that person would have, you know, go and talk to my ex-wife. She's going to have a totally different view of me than I have of me in that relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so it is a subjective field. They basically declared him a paranoid schizophrenic, which is not true of Barry Goldwater. He was just quirky, and he was on the political edge in a time when you had the Great Society passed. He was the Ron Paul before there was Ron Paul versus Barack Obama, mm-hmm. when a Barack Obama ideology was more popular in a war society than even Barack Obama was in his time. So they argue, Lee and her allies argue, the Goldwater rule, as applies to Trump, conflicts with their duty to warn the public about the grave danger posed by a flagrantly unstable president. Alan Francis, who edited the fourth edition of the APA's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM, which is kind of like the Dictionary of Mental Disorders, agrees that Trump is temperamentally unsuited for his job, but questions attempts to cast those assessments as a psychiatric diagnosis. He's definitely unstable, Francis told the Times. He is definitely impulsive. He's a world-class narcissist, not just for our day, but for the ages. You can't say enough about how incompetent and unqualified he is to be leader of the free world, but that doesn't make him mentally ill. I'd probably agree with that. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
So, in the DSM, and I'm glad he put this in here, in the
DSM... college student doing Intro to Psych's favorite book.
Right. Narcissistic personality disorder, for instance, as a pervasive pattern of grandiosity in fantasy or behavior, need for admiration, and lack of empathy beginning by early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts. The diagnosis requires at least 5 of these symptoms. Has a grandiose sense of self-importance. Example, exaggerates achievements and talents. Expects to be recognized as a superior without commensurate achievements. Number 2. Is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, powers, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love. Number 3. Believes that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by or associated with other special or high-status people or institutions.
Really?
Number 4. Requires excessive admiration. Number 5, has a sense of entitlement, i.e. unreasonable expectations of especially favorable treatment or automatic compliance with his or her expectations. Number 6, is interpersonally exploitative, i.e. takes advantage of others to achieve his or her own ends. Number 7, lacks empathy, is unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of other. Rosie's a pig. Number 8, is often envious of others or believes that others are envious of him or her. Number 9, shows arrogant or haughty behaviors or attitudes.
Are we discussing Obama or Trump? Or Bush? Or any person that thinks they can be president?
Right. There's a book called A First-Rate Madness, which is on my shelf, but I have not yet read, which basically talks about how you have to be an insane person to be president of the United States or a political figure. But especially president. Can't wait to read it. But, I mean, I would apply all 9 of those to Donald Trump. So...
yeah, I could see it. But just like I said, I could see it. But I see that in a lot of people, though. You know, how many other people that you know, they're like, oh, this is this. It seems like a BuzzFeed quiz. Yeah, give me your Chipotle order, and I will tell you, you know, what you're on the DSM forward issue that you have.
Right. So, you know,
because like a lot of the I'm not disgracing like don't discredit the DSM-4, just more of like a lot of these things, like these are just
guidelines.
Yeah, they're guidelines, and you have to take tests of whether they're accurate, because I think every human has the capability for it. But like, I think it's like, yeah, it's very disingenuous, and you know, and makes the entire like psychology feed looks more like pseudoscience when they just go out and they're like, I've never met this person, but I'm going to say this is what I think this person has. It's crazy,
right? And so he talks about in this Cato Unbound thing where they're basically talking. This Francis guy is talking about narcissistic personality disorder, which is little more than a list of unappealing characteristics that often go together, and a serious mental illness like schizophrenia, which may actually be several different things and may or may not involve identifiable neurological defect, but in France's view entails a lack of self-control that can justify coercive intervention. So somebody who is basically, let's say he is a malignant narcissist. Let's say you did get a panel together and you did look over Donald Trump. You are probably, in terms of whatever personality disorder he has, you're probably not going to find anything new. You're not going to find somebody who is a paranoid schizophrenic. And, you know, if you've dealt with, I've dealt with a couple people in my life that have been schizophrenics, and anybody who has a schizophrenic family member can tell you intervention is needed. Like, they're dangerous to others or to themselves a lot of times without proper treatment and medication. Well, Donald Trump is not a mentally ill person in the vein of a schizophrenic. He is somebody who is a functioning member of society that has amassed wealth and has managed to get himself elected president. Which
on the first try.
On the first try, which if you read the Michael Wolff book, the opening part and one of the pieces that I'll, the Hollywood Reporter piece, basically talking about how none of them expected to win, and then they were all like, oh, shit.
But,
So
what do we do now?
Right. And so Donald Trump is just, he has a list of unflattering personality traits that aren't signifying mental illness, but he's just somebody that's grotesque. Like, it doesn't mean that there needs to be medical intervention. And these are things that we all knew about Donald Trump. And almost half the country said, okay, he can be president. We'd still prefer him over Hillary Clinton.
Right. That's the other thing, too. Yeah. How bad was Hillary?
You know? Right.
You know, that shows you how worse that you lost to someone who's possibly, you know, paranoid, schizophrenic, you know, like, who's, you know. But the other thing with it is, if he made it to that age, 70 years old, did all these business deals, went through Hollywood, and you're trying to just tell me he got through all of that with a undiagnosed mental disease?
Right.
You're saying not one person through all of Hollywood, all these business deals, all these meetings, is someone just going to go like, hey, Donald, I'm going to tell you the truth. Okay, I think you have this issue. You probably need to get it checked out. Or someone didn't do a business deal with him and was like, you know what? I'm going to do this business deal with you, but I'm going to need you to see a therapist.
Right.
Just real quick, man. Just to check you out. You know. And he probably has seen a therapist just for other things, though.
Oh, I doubt that. That's a man who's never seen a therapist.
I'm sure
office.
He has, but they probably got like that NDA is so lit tight.
The only time he's probably ever seen a therapist office is like when it was in the Washington break-in in the 70s, but they tried to break into Daniel Ellsberg's office to steal some stuff.
He bought one because it was in a building that he had.
Right. Yeah. So I just I look at this and I go, okay, this guy is, you know, if we're talking about his behavior, this is the behavior that we all elected. Like, this is not somebody that is necessarily a dangerous person. When I see a lot of the bluster, like when George Bush started a war in 2003, there were rallies across the nation. People were in the streets ranting and raving, and there were articles about, you know, we shouldn't have a war, blah blah blah. Everybody takes this so unseriously that nobody's protesting a nuclear war, which is way worse than the war in Iraq.
Right.
Like, that's nuclear holocaust compared to the war in Iraq, which wasn't good, but it's not nuclear holocaust.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
I think sometimes we're taking the word mental illness and applying a political stance to it and making it something that it's not, and therefore really demeaning what mental illness truly is. And yes, Donald Trump is probably the world's greatest example of a narcissist in modern times, but he's just a great he's a liar. He's a pathological liar. The man lies every single day in some capacity. I watch the news every single day. I follow the news as closely as anybody, and every single day the man says something that is completely untrue.
Yes.
You know, but that's also a pattern of a politician. Like, Donald Trump is just a politician on steroids. Does that make it right? No. Our standard should not be like, well, at least he's better than the other guy. Or like the answer to bad journalism is not Worst journalism? It's good journalism. Like, the answer to lies are not more lies.
Super lies. Ultra lies.
Or alternate lies.
Yeah.
Alternate facts.
Alternate facts.
Alternate realities. It is truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Donald Trump is just completely incapable of the truth. In fact, what I think Donald Trump, like, I think Donald Trump, whatever is in his brain at that moment, he believes is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes that everybody else will believe the truth because he's now president, and they will appeal to authority and say, yes, because you're a president, we believe you make truth now. You know, and
but some people do.
And he's got a lot of sycophants that mm-hmm. follow him and say, yes, Donald, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got people on TV like Stephen Miller saying he's a genius. He's literally a genius. And Jake Tapper's like, you're too stupid to be here. Leave. You know, it's like Baghdad Bob or the woman who's the Kim Jong-un newsreader. Like, you just mm-hmm. go, is this America? Like, so, again, I just kind of fall somewhere in the middle. Like, I just don't think it's black and white, and I don't think the president's crazy, and I don't think that he's too mentally ill to do his job, but I do think he's too unprepared to be president. That's why I didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
I do think he's unstable. That's why I didn't vote for him.
It's okay. You'll have a choice for Oprah in 2020.
Right. Yeah. Good. Great. there's a great article called Is There Something Neurologically Wrong with Donald Trump in the Atlantic by James Hamblin on January 3rd, 2018. Again, in the show notes or at walpolitics.com. And it's basically a long explanation. Now, if the narcissistic personality disorder is not a problem, what about the cognitive decline? Is there cognitive decline? Well, this is something that I think we should seriously watch for. They talk about the slurring speech, and they talk about grabbing the glass with both hands, and the problems with his vocabulary, and they say, you know, there are people now pushing for a panel to judge the competency and the cognitive effectiveness of a president, and they point out that today even the country's missilers, whose job it is to sit in bunkers and await a signal from the president of the United States, are tested 3 times per month on their ability to execute protocols. They're required to score at least 90%. Testing is not required for their commander-in-chief that would execute the sort of high-level decision that would set the process in motion. And they point out that the average age of the people running for president are older. Last it was 69, 70, and 75. By the time of the 2021 inauguration, a president, Joe Biden, would be 78. And they point out that after 40, the brain decreases in volume by about 5%. The most noticeable loss is in the frontal lobes. These control motor functioning of the sort that would direct a hand to a cup and a cup to the mouth in one fluid motion, in most cases without even looking at the cup. These lobes also control much more important processes, from language to judgment to impulsivity. Everyone experiences at least some degree of cognitive and motor decline over time, and some 8.8% of Americans over 65 now have dementia. So then they go on to talk about, you know, people not down, basically downplaying FDR's health. And they basically say there's no real, like, formal way to judge a president's health. The president will go on Friday to the naval base to have his health inspected, and they don't have to tell us what they find.
Yeah.
It can be whatever, but they can hide it, and then they talk about basically the FDR hiding of his stuff, his polio. Let's see. So, you know, and they go on to talk about Harold Bornstein, the gastrointestinologist, his doctor who had the long hair, who was like, he's the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency.
Yeah, the guy.
That guy. Yeah. Right. It was so funny.
He's the best. I was like, are you reading his script?
Right. And this is something that I've talked about in the past. Indeed, a key indicator of neurological status, Trump's distinctive diction has not gone without scrutiny. Trump was once a more articulate person who sometimes told stories that had beginnings, middle, and ends, whereas now he leaps from thought to thought and has come to rely on a small stable of adjectives, often involving superlatives, and a probably high proportion of what he describes as either the greatest or the worst he's ever seen, absolutely terrible or the best, tiny or huge. The frontal lobes also control speech, and they basically find they go and pull. This woman at STAT, which is a site that I've never heard of, Sharon Begley, did an analysis of Trump's speeches and interviews in the 80s and 90s to now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty, I mean, it's pretty clear, like, you know, well, what we need is competence. We don't have that. We have a one-line artist. That's all he is. You know, and he has, and then they compare that today, and it's like, my wall, my beautiful wall. I love my wall. It's huge, big, big, big wall. You know, I mean, and,
could be huge.
Right. And she says that he exhibits a clear reduction in linguistic sophistication over time with simpler word choices and sentence structures. This is evident even at his resort in Florida, where he goes on to talk about tax cut will be huge. though it is not possible to diagnose a person with dementia based on speech patterns alone, these are the sorts of changes that appear in the early stages of Alzheimer's. Trump is likening himself to Ronald Reagan, and the changes in Trump's speech evoke those seen in the late president. Reagan announced Alzheimer's in 1994, but there was evidence of linguistic change over the course of his presidency that experts have argued was indicative of early decline. His grammar worsened, and his sentences were often more incomplete. He came to rely more on vague and simple words, indefinite nouns, and low imaginability words like have, go, and get. After the diagnosis, Jimmy Carter said that there should be some sort of testing, and wrote an article in 1994 in the Journal of American Medical Association, saying the great weakness of the 25th Amendment and its provision for determining disability is in the event that the president is unable or unwilling to certify to impairment or disability. And the 1967 amendment, which was shepherded through by Birch Bayh of Indiana, was in the wake of a hole in the Constitution that Birch Bayh noticed when Kennedy was assassinated and Johnson was to take over. And he said, well, what if Kennedy had been in a coma? We need some clarity in the Constitution.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why the 25th Amendment, that's when it was passed. This may not happen with a person who has come to be known for denying any hint of weakness or inability, nor would it happen if a president had a psychiatric disorder that impaired judgment, especially if it was one defined by grandiosity, obsession with status, and intense aversion to being perceived as weak. So, and it goes on to kind of continue talking about presidential fitness and mental illness and some of the decay, but really thorough article, and I don't think an unfair question to ask based on myself, like watching the videos of him on Oprah or on Larry King in the 80s or Charlie Rhodes in the 80s, he's a different person. He speaks in a different way.
Hmm.
And if he does two terms, and at this point, I think it would be, depending on who the Democrats put up, I think he would have a pretty good shot at being reelected.
They can't get anyone to build up.
Yeah.
Because any good candidate they probably had, any male is going to get torn down through Me Too. That's just the way it is. And a lot of the females just have a lot of baggage that they just have. So
right.
unless the Justice Democrat's got some Democrat that's sitting out in the woods somewhere meditating on, you know, like cactus juice and, you know, that they're going to bring out last minute, that's who they're going to have to bring out. You know, just like that's why Obama did so well. Just like, well, he's kind of was an unknown. He just became like, ah, a senator. Oh, boom, now president. Because if he stayed in the Senate for too long, he's like, oh, he would have had all this Democrat baggage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just think you should use your eyes, and I think you should trust your own gut, and you should trust your own reality. I think it is so easy when you're on Facebook all day and you don't get to read the news and you don't feel like you know what's going on, and you see somebody who is so sure that the president is the greatest president of all time and this book is a fake book, or you've got a Democrat friend who is just sure that the president has Alzheimer's and this or that. Like, just trust your own reality, all right? Like, you really look at this stuff and you go, okay, like, this person on the... I just don't trust people who are on the left or right anymore. Like, I've just stopped trusting friends who are just buying wholesale anything from Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow. Like, I just can't do it anymore. Like, I can't talk to those people. Like, it's a waste of time in some ways.
Yeah, it's a waste of time. It feels like a waste of time, and they're in their own little crazy world.
Right.
Like, I turned on a local Freedom Radio Station 90. Oh, who cares? There's junk.
Right.
And they were just talking about, and they went into this how the immigrant crisis, and we're going, it's like, what? Why are you talking about this?
Right.
Why are you spreading falsehoods about this? This is not a Republican message. You know, you're going to spend all this money doing this. Okay, whatever. And I'm like, so it's like you guys are concentrating on something that's so small, just feeding red meat to a base that somehow, for some reason, cares about this tiny little subject.
Yeah.
When you go to talk to them, they're thinking about this one thing here, which is okay. You can bring it up. You can talk about that. But it's like they're in their own little world.
Yeah.
They just decided to move on and think about other things.
The echo chambers have become more pronounced.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. You look at net neutrality. Net neutrality was not argued based on what Ajit Pai did.
Mm-hmm.
It was whatever straw man was concocted on both sides. Like, if you look at, we'll talk about the pot ruling by Sessions here in a moment. Like, libertarians are not arguing about what actually was done.
Mm-hmm.
They're just basically like, Jeff Sessions is an idiot and pot rules. Like, well, that's not actually, like, I don't know. I'm just the type of person who wants to know what's actually going on.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Call me crazy. I love making fun of people for no reason, but. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's the thing with the whole Jeff Sessions, like, make the, like, just like some of those GOP members was like, no, he's wrong on these terms. It's like, I'm not good with the pot, but these states did do this and went at it. The other thing with the whole Jeff Sessions thing is that all these Democrats are like, look at what the Republicans again. Well, Obama may have said not to send the DEA agents after marijuana dispensaries, but they did it anyways. Mm-hmm. They raided a whole bunch of places in Colorado, Washington, and California. You know, so before anyone thought like Obama was going to be soft on weed, he wasn't. He wasn't. The DEA agents still kicked down doors, stole money, stole weed.
All right, so let's talk about the Sessions ruling. Jeff Sessions released a memo this week that basically rescinded a former ruling by a deputy attorney general named Cole, I believe it was. We'll find out. But his name doesn't matter. What essentially happened when all these states like Colorado started passing legislation in their states that basically violated federal law,
mm-hmm.
The Obama administration was under pressure to release rulings for their attorney generals in these various states. And so the deputy attorney general told the federal attorneys, like, focus on your priorities, okay? If somebody is running one of these businesses where they're shipping pot into states that don't have these rules, bust them. If they're trying to sell pot to kids and market to kids, bust them. If they're trying to if they're involved in international gang violence or drug smuggling, bust them. You know, use your priorities that we've outlined in the past and focus on violent crime and violent criminals. And then if we get to pot, get to it, but only in the extreme cases.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's what most of the people who are on the extremes of this argument aren't telling you. Less than 1% of marijuana busts usually are at the federal prosecutorial level. It's a very low priority because the DEA and the federal government and the Justice Department don't have the money to go after pot criminal offenses. They're going after gangs. They're going after major drug smugglers. They're going after, you know, terrorists. They're not focused on pot farmers. And so it's never really been a priority in the first place. And all they did was basically say in 2013 and through several other rulings, focus on here. If they do these things, then yes, pursue them. But focus on the priorities that we've outlined.
Mm-hmm.
What Jeff Sessions did was say all of that isn't even necessary to say. So we're just getting rid of these guidelines. Now, yes, Jeff Sessions hates pot, and Jeff Sessions does want to take as many of the handcuffs off as possible. So it is a veiled message to federal prosecutors that you are allowed to pursue pot cases. Are they going to? No.
No.
Because when every one of both the federal prosecutor over Colorado and over Southern California, they both said, this just isn't a priority for us. We don't have the resources to pursue those cases, even if we wanted to, so it's just not going to be a big deal. And so it's become a states' rights issue. So
because
it is a states'
rights issue. Right. A lot of the things that the federal government decides to do, they shouldn't be doing, and the states should take it back.
Right. So, great article from Will Bod from the Volokh Conspiracy. Now at Reason, the rule of law supports marijuana federalism. So he writes, one major line I've seen in defense of Sessions' action is that his position is truer to the rule of law. Maybe Congress should decentralize marijuana policy, the argument goes, but until it does, the executive branch should be enforcing the law, not suspending or dispensing with ones it thinks are unwise. As a general principle, I agree there is a lot to that. Yeah, they should. Rule of law is one of our seven principles here. The seven principles of libertarianism that we uphold: individualism, individual rights, spontaneous order, limited government, free markets, the virtue of production, natural harmony of interest, and peace. Well, limited government, part of that is the rule of law. And but it shouldn't trump individualism. So right. Therefore, we believe that you should have a free market, and individuals mm-hmm. should be free to choose. And no matter whether or not the federal or the state governments are getting in the way of that, it's an unconstitutional law, and therefore mm-hmm. you should nullify it if you're a juror. Yep. Jury nullification.
Yep, jury nullification is one of the best things to do. It's in a lot of different I think it was like New Hampshire is one of the few states that you can actually go the defendant can actually say that to the juror.
Right.
And the case is out there. Indiana is also one of them. If you live in Indiana, as a defendant, you can also bring that case up. You can bring that up to the jury. And it's there basically to uncheck like awful laws like these plant-based laws, you know, or get people off or different things. That's what it's there for, or for goofy laws that need to be that are on the books and need to get off. Sorry,
go ahead.
I'm ready to explode on this thing.
Go for it. All right, let me finish setting it up, and then you can explode. So essentially, here's why rule of law, it really doesn't even matter, according to the Volokh Conspiracy. First, the Constitution does not allow Congress to regulate all in-state marijuana, and the Supreme Court should not have said that it does. Congress's enumerated powers are to regulate interstate commerce and to pass laws necessary and proper to carrying that interstate regulation into effect. This means that Congress can ban interstate drug trade and that it can also police in-state drugs that would spill over into interstate commerce, but that does not mean all in-state drugs. It depends on the circumstances in each state, and it especially depends on how each state regulates and drugs and drug policies and possible spillover. Gonzalez versus Reich in 2005 said that states have no authority based on interstate commerce when it comes to drugs, and they were wrong on that account.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the Attorney General does not have to and should not adopt the Supreme Court's reasoning in Reich and as federal law enforcement policy. Members of the executive branch have their own obligation to interpret the Constitution, and if a federal law is unconstitutional in part, then the executive branch, no less than the courts, should say so. It is the Constitution, not the court, that is the ultimate rule of law in our system. So to be consistent with the rule of law, what Attorney General Sessions should have done would have been to revise the Obama administration's enforcement guidance so that it was based on the Constitution, on the limits of federal power to reach wholly in-state activity, rather than on sheer policy discretion. So we understand the instinct to be wary of excessive executive discretion in law enforcement, but we should not forget that the Constitution is one of the laws that the executive enforces, and hopefully above all others. So going back to our seven principles, you're free to smoke weed, man. and so mm-hmm. just because the Supreme Court has passed, the executive branch should check the Supreme Court, and it should challenge Congress to change its laws.
Yeah.
And something more favorable.
Yeah. It's one thing, like, a lot of conservatives, like, I don't understand why libertarians are, like, so hyper on weed. It's like, well, because a lot of libertarians don't smoke weed.
Right.
But
I don't.
I don't either. And but we, a lot of them know people who have, or just understanding the aspect of this is the government restricting what someone is doing and putting inside their body. How can you sit there and debate me on medical care and talk about I could eat whatever cheeseburger I want and then harp on someone for smoking weed? You know, like if you believe one is damaging the body but not the other, but you're going to defend someone drinking a cheeseburger and alcohol, you're a freaking hypocrite and don't want to go over the rest of the way. You know, you mostly just see your hill that you want to talk about, but, you know, just because the weed and pot smokers is a different other, they're not your and not your case, not your drug of choice, you won't defend them of them. I think it's the most bull crappy thing that I see most quote unquote Republicans, conservatives just go after. Well, like, yeah, I just, you know, I'm fine with weed. I just don't see the point of it. I'm like, it's the point because it's the federal government regulating a plant. That's the freaking problem. They don't have the constitutionality to go after a freaking plant, especially a plant that grows freaking in anywhere. You know, I don't want to go into the aspects of like, oh, it's a miracle drug. I don't know about that. I don't really care about that. All I know is it's just a freaking plant. Doesn't harm anyone. I think the only person that's ever been killed with marijuana was crushed by it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Crushed because he's carrying so much. And with the drug bust, right? Majority of the drug bust when it comes to marijuana, just confiscation. They plead down to a lesser charge. And most of the time when they bust someone for marijuana, right, like a cop or something like that, it's so little. Most of the time, most people try to get rid of it by swallowing it or destroying it, and they get them on that. They get them right on destroying evidence.
Yeah.
Or and most of the time, so when the DEA agents do bust something, They bust businesses. So they go in and take that large jank of cash and hit that with civil asset forfeiture. Hmm. They take all that cash out of the drawer. They take the cash out of the safe because using a lot of the Commerce Clause and stuff like that, they're not able to deposit. They're not allowed to take credit card transactions or deposit a lot of that cash into banks. So they've got all this cash on hand. They can't have guns. So what happens? The freaking, you know, so the DEA agents, it's almost like sitting like, huh, our budget is down 100,000. Let's go raid this pot dispensary.
Yeah, and he rescinded some rulings on some of the money and the banking institutions. Mm-hmm. And really what Sessions, his aim here is he was creating headlines.
Correct.
And so he...
Unintentionally. That was not his intention.
No, I would argue that he knows that he's not legally changing anything. But he's creating headlines that will destabilize the industry. And if they really wanted to, they could send a letter now to each one of these dispensaries, because there's a list of all the growers and all the dispensaries, and say to all of those involved in the marijuana industry and say, you're subject to prosecution under federal law, which is technically true,
right,
because you're violating federal law even though you're following state law.
Mm-hmm.
But and that could have a chilling effect on the industry as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the likelihood of them actually pursuing anything is very nil, just based on priorities and budget. And in the document, he says, it's basically, to translate it from legalese, and because I don't have the exact language right in front of me, it's basically like, follow the long established priorities that you've had all along. Mm-hmm. Which is basically saying business as usual, guys. Mm-hmm. But this was a way to create some headlines to really demobilize and stagnate the growth and do exactly what happened, which is out on Facebook, everybody's freaking out that the Trump administration is anti-pot. Well, Donald Trump, the president, who really doesn't like Jeff Sessions and is probably going to fire him at some point in 2018... is really 50-50 on the issue. And he is a person that wants wins, okay? He's not a person with any kind of ideology. He may lean right, but he was a Democrat like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and when it comes to marijuana, he's just said, whatever. We've got bigger fish to fry. And marijuana legalization is the only issue that's the least polarizing issue in the country. Like, in 2000, 31% of adults believe that it should be legalized recreationally. This year, the Pew Research Foundation found it was 61%. It's a 30-point increase.
Right.
You know, and you've got 27 states now that allow medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana.
Yeah. And California, the biggest state. One in five people live in a state with recreational marijuana now. Like New Hampshire, as Sessions put it out, Vermont was passing in its legislature a law to make it okay recreationally. New Hampshire's about to do the same.
Yeah.
Like the dominoes are way past.
Yeah, as long as they get that stinking governor out of there.
Right.
Because like New Hampshire's been trying to pass medical marijuana for the longest time, and they've several different times they had bipartisan Republican and Democrat bills to go up to Maggie Hassan, their former governor up there, and she turned it back down. It's freaking Democrat. Democrat right. governor of New Hampshire, she just turn it back down. You know,
yeah,
crazy.
Like, this issue. It's like trying to fight against legalizing gay marriage. Like right. It's over. The fight is over. We can move on.
Right. Yeah. It's over. But the money, and it's also easy. So that's the other thing is like with the optics of the drug war. It's easy to hit a pot bus. It's easy to find a pot bus. It smells. It stinks. Pots. It's not a. It's like it's a cash crop. If it's legal, you can do large amounts of it. So it's not going to be. It's not profitable to send a lot of it in and out of the country, unless you could pay off a bunch of people and then wait and own the drugs that you can. The harder drugs. The drugs actually have guns. You know, the drugs who have like huge, massive. You know, intel operations that make billions of dollars a year. Then the DEA has to target those guys, and they don't want to.
Right.
Because I don't care what anyone says, it is impossible to get as much drugs in the United States if it's not coming in by a truck.
Yeah.
Or a boat. Or a gigantic boat. Because there's too many drugs in this country to think it's just smuggled over a border on some donkey, you know, from Mexico, or comes in on tiny little cigarette boats in Florida, or some, you know, Canadian backpacker coming over to Canada. That's bull crap. I mean, everyone and their mama knows exactly how the drugs are getting in this country. They're coming through the border, and each border, and could because if it's a billion-dollar company, they can spend millions of dollars to pay off every freaking agent from the border up to get paid and come to the country.
Yeah.
And if you try to tell me I'm not, and it's like, fine, then explain to me how all these drugs are getting in this country. Explain to me exactly how, because other than that, dude, that makes no sense. It's not coming in that many butts. There's not that many butts that can hold that
much. There's a lot of butts.
There's a lot of butts, but you can only fit so much up your butt, okay?
Says you. you should see how large my anal cavity is.
So that's how you pay to go on your trips.
Yeah, I smuggle myself up there. I have such a large anal cavity because I'm always talking out of my ass.
So I can see what you're saying. Like, to me, I thought he was just trying to change things up and someone just kind of like grabbed. He did it to make it make sense to possibly try to. I thought he was mostly just trying to pivot it.
Right.
That's what I felt. He thought he was just trying to pivot the language of it. But then again, I see what you're saying, but like I should more seem to try to pivot, and then someone noticed the pivot and then decided to make it like a press.
It was a wink to anybody that might be favorable, and none of them are favorable, even though a lot of the prosecutors, the federal prosecutors, are appointed by Sessions. They're not going after pot. Like, I think that if you're in a state where you have medical or recreational marijuana, I don't think you're in any danger. I don't think that anything's going to change. I think that this was just a complete PR stunt by Jeff Sessions.
They need the tax money because smoking is down.
Right.
Okay. The anti-smoking people, you succeeded. The other problem is there's a lot of things that were paid from that smoking tax. It's gone now.
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the, like here, our children's insurance program in Indiana, HIP, Help Indiana?
Yeah, Healthy Indiana program.
Was paid by cigarette taxes and cigarette settlements. And so, you know, that's waning. But, and I would say that in my preparation on the Michael Wolff stuff, one of the people reviewing the book said, basically when you read anything in media today about politics, you have to ask yourself, qui bono, who benefits? Who is benefiting from me reading this information? Because so much of political journalism is gossip. It is a highly placed source who is basically leaking information strategically So you will read it and think a certain way about a certain person or thing or policy. And so when you read stuff, you have to sit there and go, okay, who's benefiting from this? And so that is a really good standard, I think. Like, if you're reading the Michael Wolff book and Steve Bannon looks brilliant, then you go, okay, well, then this was ghostwritten by Steve Bannon because he's benefiting the most from this. And in this case with Jeff Sessions, Jeff Sessions is benefiting. Jeff Sessions has had his credibility damaged by the Trump base, which is mostly boomer right. And so what's the best way for him to re-ingratiate himself to that base? Well, get some favorable headlines by cracking down on some potheads. So Jeff Sessions effectively does nothing on the legal side, but does everything on the political side to help himself. So that's really the message that comes out of this. So while we're talking about bad journalism, let's talk about some good journalism. James Risen, R-I-S-E-N, is a former New York Times reporter. Actually, his first reporting job was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Shout out to our super duper fan, Christy Avery. And James Risen went on to be the intelligence reporter for the New York Times. And he is now working for The Intercept, the Glenn Greenwald outfit, and has written what I can only say is a mini book on The Intercept website about his experience of being charged by the Bush and Obama administrations for not giving up his sources. So James Risen essentially had so much huge groundbreaking information in the early 2000s that wouldn't get printed. The PRISM program, the first phases of the PRISM program that Edward Snowden leaked.
Yeah.
James Risen had and had written stories and submitted to his editors 10 years previous. In the mid-2000s, he was writing about how they were doing massive surveillance on Americans. And he would submit it to his editors, and the executive editor of the Times and his direct editor would not print it because the Bush administration, and he presumes Dick Cheney, were directly asking them not to. And he's even mentioned in Michael Hayden's book, who was NSA director, as someone who they just couldn't work with. He only cared about the public's right to know. And his direct editor, I wish I remembered his name, but he did a great – Risen did a great podcast on The Intercept. It's called Intercepted with Jeremy Scahill. It's the most recent episode. I'll put it all in the show notes. And he basically said, yeah, the executive editor of the New York Times was summoned to the CIA and NSA headquarters. He became friends with the head of the intelligence community. He was given tours that were specifically designed to get him to see their point of view and scare him. And basically they were case officering him, which is a way of saying that the intelligence services of the United States government groomed this editor at the New York Times to keep him from printing stories under Bush and Obama that would basically expose everything that Edward Snowden exposed. James Risen wrote a book at one point called The State of War, and he got so frustrated by so many of his revelations. You know, on the terrorist finance tracking program, the SWIFT database, the secret operations that were carried out in Iran against their nuclear program by the CIA. Did you ever hear that the CIA went into Iran to blow up their nuclear operations under the Bush administration? That would be Mittens destroying
terrorism,
jihading on Harry's backpack in the background.
Glad my laptop was out of there.
Yeah, sorry about that. You know better.
Yep.
So the U.S. government, federal government, also obtained. They started as when they found out. So he said to his editors, "I want you to know." Yes, Harry.
I'm just gonna say, you know, it's crazy about that.
What?
I did know that? You know, well, how I know that?
How?
You ready?
Uh-huh.
Infowars.com.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's nuts. That's crazy.
You would
crap baskets.
You would think, and this shows you the propaganda of the early to mid 2000s. You would think that a book that came out and said, it's called The State of War, The Secret History of the CIA and the Bush Administration by the New York Times intelligence reporter, who is has won massive. He is not Michael Wolff. This is a very credible journalist. He is like David K. Johnston, who is the former tax writer at the Times, who has written many great books. Like, he is an eminently credible, qualified journalist. And he wrote a book that basically said, we carried out a CIA operation in 2000, Operation Merlin, intended to delay Iran's alleged nuclear weapons program by feeding it flawed blueprints for key missing components, which backfired and may have actually aided Iran, as the flaw was likely detected and corrected by a former Soviet nuclear scientist the operation used to make the delivery. In early 2003, the New York Times refrained from publication of the story after intervention by NSA advisor Condoleezza Rice with the New York Times executive editor Hal Raines. And so they stopped that book. He writes, several of the Iranian CIA agents were arrested and jailed, while the fate of some of others is still unknown, after a CIA official in 2004 sent an Iranian agent an encrypted electronic message, mistakenly including data that could potentially identify virtually every spy the CIA had in Iran. The Iranian was a double agent and handed over the information to Iranian intelligence. This also had been denied by an intelligence official. He also alleges that the Bush administration is responsible for the transformation of Afghanistan into a narco state that provides a purported 80% of the world's heroin supply. It also contains the NSA leak story. Basically, in retaliation, while he was researching the book, they found out Risen's email and phone connections with CIA operations officer Jeffrey Alexander Sterling were monitored by the federal government. The U.S. federal government also obtained his credit and bank records. They issued a press release indicating the books contained serious errors in every chapter. And they released documents, however, in 2015 confirming many details on Operation Merlin. This is all from James Risen's Wikipedia page. So he says he's also the reporter that broke the Win Ho Lee story when a Los Alamos computer scientist who is a Chinese American had stolen nuclear secrets for China. So James Risen is an American hero. This is somebody who had all these amazing groundbreaking stories in the middle of the Iraq War that of what the security apparatus was building. And would go to his editors, and at every turn, the editors would not print it. So he said, I'm writing a book, and I'm going to print the book. And they did everything they could to thwart him. They fired him eventually for insubordination. And he has now written a new book, which I should be more prepared and should be able to tell you right off the top of my head what said book is. But he has written a new book talking about his fight with the New York Times and with the federal government about his challenges, basically trying to bring us the information that we need to know and in all the ways that the government has been spying on us for nearly 20 years. And he eventually was sued by the Bush administration. You may remember that his colleague, was it Judith? I should have written all this down. Yes, Pay Any Price by James Risen is out now, $9, $9.99 on Kindle. Please give that guy $10. He's worth it. Pay Any Price by James Risen. And he eventually goes on to get sued, and the case lasts for 7 years of the Obama administration. And he refuses to give up his sources. He refuses to give up his sources, just like his New York Times colleagues, just like Fox News' James Rosen, Cheryl Atkinson, who was spied on, had her computer woken up by the NSA and saw the NSA hacking her computer. You know, these are the serious journalistic assaults by the federal government on journalism under two administrations. And I will say, to Trump's credit, that Michael Wolff in the beginning of the book praised Donald Trump for being more open with the press than his predecessors. And it is true that Donald Trump has been, and this is the great dichotomy of Donald Trump, is that Donald Trump has always sued reporters and talked crap about reporters, but then gives them more access, including calling them up under fake names and giving them tips. In the 80s, he would call the Post as his press agent, and he basically sounded like Donald Trump, and like you can hear the tapes of Donald Trump pretending to be a press agent. But so for all the talk of Donald Trump being anti-press, and he is, it's the truth is that Barack Obama prosecuted more sources for journalists under the Espionage Act than every president combined, mm-hmm. and threatened to jail James Risen.
Yep.
And, you know,
and denied access.
And denied access like you wouldn't believe. And it's just, I'm glad that Donald Trump is so incompetent that he doesn't understand the powers that he actually has.
Right.
Because if he were as smart as George Bush or Barack Obama, he'd probably do way worse crap. Mm-hmm. And this is the argument for not building a secret state. Because the NSA spied on Donald Trump's presidential campaign, and that information was, I would bet you $1 million that if we could find the truth, Donald Trump and all this spying apparatus that was used on Carter Page and Donald Trump and the tower and Trump Tower and Manafort and Michael Flynn,
mm-hmm.
I bet you all that information found its way right back to Hillary Clinton during the campaign.
Probably accidentally.
Accidentally.
In one of her bathroom servers.
Right. So speaking of that, I don't know if there's anything you'd like to say about that particular story before we move on to
which is one. Weird is like to think back about all those InfoWar stories, is most of like Alex Jones's like sources are people in like the like times of mainstream media that can't get articles posted, so
right.
They just send it over to him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna send it to him. Why? He'll say anything.
Right. He's the Michael Wolff of media.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's why I've always said he is 50% bluster and vitamin sales, mm-hmm. 25% batshit crazy conspiracy, and 25%, oh, that's probably true.
Yeah, that one's probably.
That's why I listen to Alex Jones, is because I think sometimes some of his narratives might not be wrong.
Yeah, I love playing one-player games and just listening to InfoWars.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like having it in the background, and if he says something like, wait a minute, stop, let me like write that down and go after that. I'm going to go look that right. up real quick after that. But yeah, you know, it's, which is weird, is like I said, I would love just to listen to Alex Jones and it'd be like the flight of fancy, like something to listen to, like that, like, kind of like listen to Coast AM and have people call in and stuff for that.
Right.
But, you know, horrible every time when you find out, like, wow, he said this and came out. Like, when everyone was first talking about Prism, I was like, yeah, I know about that.
The original cast returns Thursday, Chris Galt and Creighton Harrington, and I may ask Galt, because Galt has said 2017 is the year that Alex Jones was proved credible.
It was, which is scary.
Maybe.
Yeah, but not 100% credible. I'm not saying everything out of his mouth was gold.
Worth listening to.
Yeah, worth definitely.
On occasion.
Yeah, worth listening to. It definitely more like if you go to sites like some of the awful gutter and you don't do InfoWars, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
You know, I go to the gutter sites and get
like
stuff
what?
From
huh? Natural News or what?
You know, you just go places where you just to go find awful things just to see what they're thinking, what they're reading about, just because you may discredit like
4chan poll.
Yeah, I don't go to 4chan. I have never been to 4chan. I don't know what you're talking about. But no, I like to read articles off a site that I disagree with, just to get the information of it. Like, I used to jump on just to see what the Daily Stormer was doing. Heck yeah. What the heck are these people think about it? They're crazy. They're freaking bat crap crazy.
Best way to not be afraid of a white supremacist is to meet one.
Right. Listen to them.
Talk
but
to them.
At the same time, I like to look at all the black supremacy stuff, the We Was Kings crap. You know, I like to look at that, see what they're doing. You know.
Speaking of conspiracies,
uh-huh.
This is from rawstory.com. Raw Story is a left-leaning aggregation site like the Blaze or the Daily Wire or Daily Caller. But on the left, it's Raw Story, Huffington Post, Salon Talking Points memos. So they write, Fusion GPS attorney. Now, Fusion GPS, as you will recall, they are the ones that were hired by the Washington Times was it the Washington Times or the Washington Examiner? The DC Examiner, I think, is actually the one that hired them originally to do the Steele dossier. Eventually, the Clinton administration or the Clinton campaign took it up, paid for the dossier. It's the one that started all the Russia hullabaloo. It basically said that Donald Trump was being groomed by Putin for 5 years, and Putin is basically grooming Trump to be president and helping him win. And he got peed. He watched Russian hookers pee on each other, and BuzzFeed printed it in whole. Fusion GPS is a group of former journalists from the Wall Street Journal and other places who formed this basically negative research firm. Like, if you're running a campaign, you hire them to dig up dirt on your candidate. And so they're talking about the Steele dossier here, and the headline is Fusion GPS attorney drops bombshell. How do we know this is credible? Well, Dianne Feinstein asked that all of the testimony by the head of Fusion GPS about the dossier be released to the public, and it was. And he says, Fusion GPS attorney drops bombshell. Somebody's already been killed as a result of this dossier. At least one person has been killed as a result of the Steele dossier, according to congressional testimony. Fusion GPS founder Glenn Simpson told the Senate Judiciary Committee in August that he could not describe what steps his firm and the dossier's author had taken to verify the credibility of their sources. The firm's attorney, Joshua Levy, explained to lawmakers why Simpson was reluctant to reveal much about their sources or methods. It's a voluntary interview, and in addition to that, he wants to be very careful to protect his sources, Levy told the panel. Somebody's already been killed as a result of the publication of this dossier, and no harm should come to anybody related to this honest work. Mm. So, political espionage. Let's put this into perspective. A person died, according to them. A person died, one of their sources died, giving information that could be used in negative campaigning against Donald Trump, against any of the Republicans. Who is that person, and what did they die from? Some on the internet are floating Seth Rich.
Seems very plausible.
I mean, he's kind of the obvious person because of all that we know about Seth Rich's death. Mm-hmm. But can't say that for sure. Obviously, that it, you know, but
there's a lot. But there's was a lot of weird heart attacks in 2016.
That's just a chilling thought. That, like, every time you see one of those negative campaign ads on your TV, somebody died for that. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
So, all right. So next time, this is why I always say, every tweet, every Facebook post, every comment that comes out of your mouth is an extension of your moral values. And if you're going to share stuff on Facebook, there's real life consequences to what you're sharing. And are you contributing to the political discourse in a public way and in a way that that upholds your personal values and beliefs? I fall short of it all the time, but that's the standard that I'm trying to meet. Trying to put positive out into the world.
Yep.
Things that don't get people killed. Final story for tonight. U.S. to loosen nuclear weapons constraints and develop more usable warheads. The Trump administration plans to loosen constraints on the use of nuclear weapons and develop a new low-yield nuclear warhead for U.S. Trident missiles, according to a former official who has seen the most recent draft of a policy review. This is from The Guardian, Julian Borger, today, Tuesday, I need to go, whatever plan you're putting together for Donald Trump and Barack Obama, put me under it. I'm ready.
We already got that. I already got that. I need like two more signatures.
Yeah, two hours of talking.
Mitten's already signed.
On an 18-hour day, and I'm burnt.
I'm trying to get muffins.
Muffins is my homegirl, and she will not.
She won't sign.
She won't relent. Essentially, everybody's freaking out over this. what you have to understand is a lot of our nuclear arsenal is very outdated. The technology in it is very outdated. And Harry, you're really into tech. What happens when you use old technology that isn't updated?
Works. Oh, I'm sorry. if it's not broken, don't fix it. The biggest problem is the things break down, or you can't find someone that, you know, knows how to program it or work on it. Just like the whole Cobalt disaster. Was it like 15 years ago when you couldn't find a Cobalt? Oh, you know, I can't remember.
I had a Chevy Cobalt. It was a piece of shit.
No, not Cobalt, Chevy Cobalt, which is Cavalier, really. Right. But I'm talking about, it's a Cobalt, it's a mainframe programming language and stuff like that. Just like, because like a lot of our old nuclear tech is all based off of, oh God, what is that? I can't remember. But it's like, you see in all the photos, like they're big, massive 5.5 floppy drives.
Yeah.
Which is awful because, you know, like there's probably are security holes and all that. But as long as it's not connected to internet, man, yeah, I don't really see a problem with that.
Well, and that's the argument. The reason that we use those old floppies, like I used in, you know, second grade.
Yeah.
That you played Oregon Trail on originally is because it's never been. Yeah, it's never been connected to the internet. So it is safer.
You need physical access, and physical access is super hard to get.
So even, you know, so that's, there's a debate going on in Washington and amongst the foreign council on foreign relations people.
Hold on. Let me preface that. When I said internet and nuclear program, hold on. They're not connect. Okay.
Harry, do not muddy this with nerd stuff.
Someone is going to tweet at me later, like, Harry
has been granted a dear leader's reprieve for you fact-checking nerds. I don't care. I'm tired and I want to end this show.
All right,
the debate going on in the Council on Foreign Relations folks, the defense and international relations people, is we do need to upgrade the tech and the weapons on the nuclear side, but if you do that, you signal the Russians. The Russians actually come here and inspect our nuclear facilities, and we go over and inspect theirs. And like, there's in Nevada or Utah or wherever. There's like these old nuclear reactor bases that used to build nuclear weapons, and they're now museums. Mm-hmm. And Russians come over and tour those to see if water has gone through lines and stuff like that. And so the argument is that if we do kind of what we need to do to maintain our nuclear arsenal, then we're going to get Russia and China and everybody else building new nuclear weapons.
Well, we got to update too if you're updating.
Exactly right. And so
the iNuke.
I'm all in favor of just closing it all down. So
not personal. Everyone, you know, U.S. isn't doing it, but everyone has their own individual nuke.
Right.
The McNukes and iNukes.
All right, so Harry, final thoughts for this episode.
Final thoughts for this episode. One, when it comes down to it, when you're looking, which the only thing that ever gave me peace of listening to anything that Trump said is take him figuratively, not literally.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy, little. Sometimes it's easier.
He's a showman. He's doing a reality show.
Right, yeah, it's a show. It's a show. And enjoy the show. Enjoy it. Like, it's going to be a great show, especially if Oprah really does toss her hat in the ring. This is a show now. You know, it, you know, you might as well enjoy the show. And if Oprah does toss her hat in the ring, libertarians, bring the show. Get McAfee up there. It's going to be great. Let the show begin. the other thing I always want to do is, like, when it comes to, all right, so the nuclear program, the internet thing. Okay, sorry, that is like, okay, I'll drop it. I'll talk about it tomorrow on Twitch. You guys can see me on
intranet versus internet. We know.
Anyway, I'll talk about it tomorrow on Twitch. Bring it up, I'll talk about it. I'll be on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/WeAreLibertarians, shorten it to the letter R, because James Neese has lost the account login that we had for our libertarians, actually spelled out. So I'll be on there about 7 or 8 o'clock, depending on how Gunther is on tomorrow, which I'm glad to help you guys see you guys on there. Best recommendation, if you are an Amazon Prime member and you want to come over there, you go ahead and log in and link your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch account, because if you don't, they'll pop ads up at you in the middle of the show. So I'll be sitting there talking, you really interested, and then you'll get hit with an ad.
That's annoying.
Which is annoying. But you don't get that if you're an Amazon Prime member. So,
I have been using a couple things that I think are really cool that I'm sure everybody else uses, but I'm just getting caught up on it. First is Goodreads. I went through and you can use this app called Goodreads, one word, and it's basically, I think Amazon probably owns it. And you can go in and you can scan all your books. You can add all the books you purchased on Amazon or on your Kindle. You can show people what you're reading. You can review books. You can show what you've read. I've gone in and scanned in all my books. I'm almost done scanning in all my books. Good chance to clean the shelves and get the dust and dirt off the books.
You mean duplicates?
No. And yeah, I threw away some books. I didn't throw them away. I threw away some books because they were.
You went to a book burning?
They were trashy romance novels that Jeremiah gave me. And I was like, I'm never going to read Blaxploitation 3.
Did you watch my movie? You know?
I've never seen your porno, Harry.
Mandingo 2, Son of Mandingo.
So, and in doing that, I created the top 100 books that have been mentioned on this show. And you can find that in the blog roll links at wearelibertarians.com. So if you want a list of 100 books that we've mentioned, I think my reading list of all my different books, you can peruse my books.
There's a lot of non-Thomas Sowell books on that list.
I don't think we've...
There's not a Thomas Sowell book isn't. On there.
There
yeah.
isn't. But I think you can actually go and vote on books.
Okay.
So you can probably add on there. The other is Ancestry. I got an Ancestry today, Ancestry.com.
Mm-hmm.
Started putting together my family tree. It's really cool. Mm. It's a really cool service. So if you're like me, you've wanted to do Ancestry.com forever, and you've just been like, I don't know. It's super easy to like track everybody down. I can see who was born in Germany. All my family, every single branch started in Germany. Except for one part of my grandfather's family that started in England. I'm almost back six generations just on the app and, just playing around with it. It's pretty fun. So recommend that. A couple housekeeping things. If you've got an Amazon or an Alexa if you got an Amazon Echo or one of the Amazon devices or a Google Home, ask it to Alexa, play We Are Libertarians Radio. Alexa, stop.
Also, top tip, make sure you use your assistant. Make sure you put the security codes in so it responds to like voices in the house, too. That'd be great.
Because I just triggered everyone's, Alexa, tell me a dirty joke. So if you can play We Are Libertarians Radio through TuneIn Radio. If you got TuneIn on the mobile app, you can listen to We Are Libertarians Radio. It's basically a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week stream where you can listen to all of the We Are Libertarians episodes. You can also get that on the front page of WeAreLibertarians.com. And want to thank our Patreon subscribers, our top subscribers, $100 a month, our all-stars. Brandon Luke, Christy Avery, Craig DaCosta, Jason Doolittle. Jason's going to fly in. He's going to do the show. Christy just did an episode of Miranda's World. She's been on. I need to get with Craig DaCosta. He gets to sit on a show. Mm-hmm. I need to get Brandon Luke set up so he can come on the show as well. Our $25 a month folks, Todd Singer, Christopher Brokoff, Doug Stream, Dan Dunbar, Christian Emmons, Heidi Aldridge, Brandon Kester, Carly Ernst, Pete Jones, Joey Turner, Chad Oakage, Nick Economopoulos, Rick Irvine, Brantley Spicer, and Stone Aldridge.
Woo!
Let me say this. You think you don't have money to subscribe to We Are Libertarians to help make us the biggest independent media outlet of all time, bigger than Alex Jones, bigger than Democracy Now!, bigger than the Young Turks, bigger than the Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro. Let me tell you about Stone Aldridge. Stone Aldridge is 21. He mm-hmm. lives in Georgia. He's just a wee lad.
Mm-hmm.
I feel about him as though he's my son. I have taken him under my wing. I'm teaching him about women and life. We're working on videos. He's doing some video work. To get a subscription, he actually went out and bought one of those reloadable cards for $10 a month so he could join Dear Leaders Court and watch the live stream of the shows every Tuesday and Thursday night. But then he was like, you know what? I can do more. He got a second job so he could be a $25 a month subscriber on Patreon so he could get the autographed posters. And like, he's such a good kid. Mm-hmm. He is doing, his $25 is like $1,000 to you and me, Harry, because he's just a mensch. He looks like a little Ben Shapiro, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does. He's just a nice boy, and I want to say thank you to Stone, because I really appreciate that. You're a very good guy, and it was great meeting Brantley Spicer this past weekend as well at the Libertarian Party meeting. Super nice. We just have, like, the nicest listeners. We have the best listeners. They're great listeners, and I just really enjoy when people donate and contribute, then we build a relationship with them, and it's really a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And help build the community.
Absolutely. And to that end, I noticed that not a lot of you listened to the horse race episode this past Thursday, but it's a very special episode that I want you to try out. We had a couple people join the horse race club. I was able to schedule some advertising for the horse race club today on Facebook to promote that. I got a lot of great response about it. I'm looking for a couple of candidates because I do want to do another round. I've talked to the national party to see if they'll send me some of their candidates. They're going to promote it. So, yeah, I'm really excited about the response about that. The listenership was down, so if you didn't listen to the horse race, go back and listen to it. I promise you'll like it.
Okay.
All right. So those are the show notes. Those are the program notes here.
Probably do a podcast of it. Make some listen to it on Twitch.
Yes. And listen to Harry tomorrow night, and you can listen to it on the Patreon RSS feed if you're an audio listener like me.
Is it on my Google Play?
And, oh, yeah, I messed up on the Google Play, guys. I put in the new RSS feed to the Google Play hub, so you can listen on Google Play, the Google Play store, and then I deleted it and left the old RSS in there. I'm very sorry. So someone messaged us today, and
thank you.
Joe Benavidez basically messaged me today and said, "Hey, dude, have you done an episode since 251? I'm like, "Yeah." So I resubmitted it. So if you're a Google Play Store listener, then that will be updated tomorrow on January 10th. So, all right. Sorry about that, guys. I'm not perfect. I try. All right. We will see you on Thursday. Harry, we'll see you tomorrow. And until then, we say good be to each other. Wow.
Gotta get that muffin signature.
Bye.
Bye.